out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 15th of January, 2018. It's the start of another week, so of course we have Jez Turner from the London Forum with us. Jez, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you. Very well. Good to see you all. Good to hear from you all.
Excellent.
Thanks for listening in.
Well, you certainly went down well last time. We got lots of positive comments, and I do like your ideas for having some regular parts to the show as well, particularly this on this day in history. And you've just come up with a couple of other ones: a hero of the white race, and what lunacy is this that we can look forward to later on in the program. But what happened on this day in history, then, Jez?
Well, let's go way back here. 588 BC, 588 BC. What happened on that day, 15th of January? Well, we're approximating here, but on that day, King Nebuchadnezzar began his siege of Jerusalem. This is known as the Second Siege of Jerusalem in historical terms. It lasted until the 23rd of July, 586 BC, when the city fell. And it ended in the destruction of the city and the temple. And I quote Kings and Lamentations here. Every worst vice befell the city, which drained the cup of God's fury to the dregs. So what's that? Never again. A real Holocaust. You see, every so often, both gods and men have had enough of the Chosenites and teaches them a lesson. But they never learn, do they? Moving onwards, 69 BC, Otho seized power in Rome and called himself emperor. Didn't last long because 69 BC was the year of the four emperors: Galba, Otho, Vitellius, Vespasian. Chaos. Moving on to England, we've got 1559 AD, Elizabeth I was crowned Queen of England. Now, one good thing she did was she repatriated all Britain's blackamoors and darkies. They're all sent back to Africa. Good on Queen Bess. 1759, the British Museum, London, was opened. We can discuss a bit more on that later on. They've got an exhibition on Rodin opening soon. And 1876, the first Afrikaans language newspaper was published in Paarl, Western Cape, South Africa. Paarl means pearl. And thank you, by the way, to the listener from South Africa, from Orania, who sent me some money. So 1895 AD, Tchaikovsky's ballet Swan Lake was first performed. That took place in St. Petersburg. And let's end on a high note there. 1919 AD. What happened then? On this day in Germany, the ultra-hardline psychopathic communists Rosa Luxemburg and Karl Liebknecht were killed by the Freikorps. Yes.
Fantastic.
So, I want you all to pause for a moment. And if you have a coffee there, grab it. If you have a bottle of water, if a drink, get a drink. We're going to do a toast. Let's also remember Carmen Chita Franco, who died recently. She was the daughter of Franco. And she always stayed loyal. She, mother of seven children, she never criticized the regime, never apologized. You got your drink. Right, so let's have a toast here. Let's remember, when we do this toast, what the Elizabethan Sir Francis Bacon said. He said, "The great end of life is not knowledge, but action." So with that in mind, I propose two toasts. First of all, to absent comrades. To absent comrades. Secondly, Carmen Chita and the Carmen Chita means small Carmen. Carmen Chita was the only daughter of Franco. So they called her Carmen Chita Franco. People like this, Carmen Chita Franco and the Freikorps, may their dedication, determination, loyalty, and bravery be an inspiration to us all and to future generations. So once more, raise your glasses to Franco and the Freikorps. Franco and the Freikorps. There we are.
Excellent. I didn't realize I'd get a chance for a break for a quick drink then as well, Jess.
Good.
Go on.
Those of you into popular culture, pop music, may have heard of a band called The Stranglers. They did a few songs, Golden Brown, yeah. Always the Sun, No More Heroes Anymore. One of their songs is called Spain. And every year in Spain, Carmen Chita Franco, as a girl, would give a speech on the radio to the children of Spain, children of the world, actually. And this became a popular sort of thing, rather like the young Queen Elizabeth would do this. And the Stranglers took these words and they got an actor to impersonate them and they put them on their single, Spain, their record, Spain. And when they went to tour Spain and Carmen Chita was in her 70s, she came on stage and read out these words. So the Stranglers, a lot of popular culture pop bands are a lot of people in the bohemian, shall we say, the sort of artistic world are not opposed to our views. They keep it quiet, you know, Eric Clapton and these people, but you know, they're sympathetic. So there we are. That's today on this day. I thought we could move on swiftly to think of current heroes of the white race. And I want to mention two things here. There's a big drive against white men. We're all useless. We're all lazy. We're all fat. We're all slobbly. We're blah, 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 blah. We're no good, you know. We need replacing, basically. But, of course, this is not true. It's just the mass media's take on things for an obvious reason. They want to get rid of us. They want to exterminate us. But if we look a bit deeply into things, into current events, we can find plenty of heroes. And I want you to bring it to your attention now. A 12-year-old boy. He drowned. Excuse me. He drowned saving four girls from the river in Nottingham. A popular schoolboy drowned after going to rescue two of his friends from a fast-flowing river when they screamed for help. Owen Jenkins, 12 years old, was swept away. So this boy, you know, he's photographed there. Little blonde boy, 12 years old. Four girls are in the river paddling. And it's by weir. The current's very strong. They get swept away. He dives in. And he saves the other one. And of course, what happens when you are in a situation, your body focuses on saving whoever you're saving, you know? And then once you've done that, your body just gives up. So he saved one, saved the second one, and then gave up. His body, you know, ran out of energy, and he was swept away, and he died. So let nobody tell you that, you know, our youth are no good. This boy gave his life. So that's very important.
It's amazing, that. That really is amazing. I remember hearing about that. It's a real tragedy, but at the same time, just shows you just what bravery and courage we have. And to see that in a 12-year-old boy is quite incredible. I got taught one of the first rules of life saving is you must ascertain the situation so that your own life isn't at risk. And that gets taken to the extent where police won't even go into a paddling pool because they think they might fall over and drown. So they won't even go into a paddling pool to rescue people. And yet this young lad, 12 years old, dives in and rescues three girls and ends up giving his own life. It's so sad, but at the same time, you know, his parents must be so proud of him. Yeah, very, very proud of him for doing
so, that. So, on a lighter note, yesterday, four sportsmen, the rowers, four white men, four British white men, they rowed the Atlantic from the Canaries to Antigua. It's 3,000 miles in a rowing boat. Okay, now that's a hard thing to do. And the previous record was 35 days. Well, Dickie Taylor, Peter Robinson, Stuart Watts, George Bigger, did it in 29 days. They knocked 6 days off the record. So bravo and well done to them.
British as well. British as well.
White, yeah.
White and British. Best combination.
Good role models to us all. Good role models to us all. Not so good role models. Lady Diana Spencer and Dodi Fayed. A gold statue was put in Harrods by Dodi Fayed, and he's sold Harrods. It's a big shop in London, if you don't know. It's a very expensive shop, but you can buy anything you want to there. Even camels. And there's a statue there that Dodi Fayed. It's a pretty awful statue. And the Qataris who bought it off Dodi Fayed, they bought the whole shop, kept his statue. But they've just now removed it, given it back to Dodi Fayed. And which is good riddance, really. You know, can we please also, Mr. Dodi Fayed, who owns Fulham Football Club still, can we remove the statue of paedophile Michael Jackson that pollutes the street outside Fulham Football Club? But Lady Diana Spencer and Dodi Fayed. I mean, you know, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. Do we see a pattern here? You know, he's certainly his mother's son. As for James Hewitt, well, he always was partial to the dusky maidens. He liked a bit of black, so who knows?
I think as he's got older, he's actually started looking more like Charles than Major James Hewitt.
Has he?
It's just something that I thought, because when he was younger, he really did look like Major James Hewitt with the hair and the rest of it. But now, I think I'm sort of doubting that and thinking that maybe he is Charles's son. He has certainly got started to look more like him as he got older, I think.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, who can say? DNA would tell us.
Not much chance of DNA testing him. Not for a few thousand years, I guess. They like to dig them up, don't they? But you were telling me that they've found an ancient burial ground and then kept that hidden so they could build over it, Jez. What was this you were telling me about?
Gosh. Well, as you know, a million non-white immigrants coming into Britain every year. What happens? It turns our urban areas into multiracial slums and the whites move out. They've got to move somewhere. So the local councils have been forced to build housing estates everywhere, even outside of villages. And down in Somerset, there's a village called Yalton. Y-A-L-T-O-N. And this really makes my blood boil. This is by the site of Cadbury Hill, an Iron Age fort. Also a Roman fort was there. And they're building this huge housing estate on the edge of Yalton, this village. And the locals don't want this housing estate. Nobody wants it. Who wants it? The people like, these housing developing billionaires, people like Iacobescu from Romania, these sort of people. And they developing this site, so they say. And a year ago, they discovered a huge pre-Christian cemetery. Over 300 graves there, plus horse burials and all kinds of things there. And this has been kept secret. Not even the villagers knew about it. Now, it's just all come out somehow. And Mike Horton, Professor of Archaeology at British Bristol University, says it's a scandal. And the government was in on the cover-up as well. The council has said, well, they kept it quiet because the discovery of human remains is always sensitive, and it would have slowed up the building work.
I think part's the truthful part of that comment. They certainly haven't got any squeamishness about any other archaeological digs, have they? We're going into the pyramids or digging around. When you're talking pre-Christian, like 1,500 years ago, there isn't going to be anybody around who's going to be offended, and we could have learned a hell of a lot from that. I'd love to know what the burials could tell us from that time, because you're talking just before the Saxons came. You'd had Christianity for quite some time with the British, so that was probably the Saxons. And if they had the horse burials there, that gives a link to the old Aryan religions where the horse was sacred.
Very interesting indeed. I mean, this you've got to realize that whatever authority we've got ruling over us, whether it's civil society, when you hear the word civil society, that means Jews, okay? It means George Soros, it means those sort of groups run by billionaire Jews like George Soros. Open society, common purpose, big government, small government, local government, even government down in Somerset. They've all got one thing in common. They hate whites. Yeah. Dead whites don't matter. You know, our culture does not matter. Don't ever forget that. We're white and they're out to get us.
I still wish we could have learned something from that. I mean, that you know, I mean, what other burial grounds are there with 300 bodies going back that far? I can't
horses
think of
as
any.
Well. Yeah, I mean,
I can't think of any. You know. Just the fact it had horses tells you something, doesn't it? Tells you, gives you a link that we weren't aware of before. Just think of everything that's been lost by them doing that. Shocking.
Yeah. Now, any of your listeners remember an actor called Oliver Reed? Remember Oliver Reed?
Yeah. Didn't he write a book about Islam and Jews? Or am I thinking of someone else?
I don't know. He had some pretty politically incorrect views, but he's basically an actor. He played Bill Sykes in Oliver Twist and did various things. But he had this phrase, whenever something, he'd walk into a room and he'd say, "What fresh lunacy is this? What fresh lunacy is this?" I thought we'd have a regular slot. We'd call it "What fresh lunacy is this?" And my proposal for this week's "What fresh lunacy is this?" is coffee. What we need, Radio Aaron, is we need a Radio Aaron coffee brand, and I've discovered one. Saquella 1856 is an Italian company. £5 a tub. It's gold with a red label. And there's a picture on the front of a white colonial overseer overseeing Negro workers on a coffee plantation. Right. And this coffee, here we go, was available from Waitrose until two liberal friends who live in Bloomsbury saw the tins. They saw the tins in the Waitrose supermarkets in the Brunswick Centre shopping mall. Now, the Brunswick Centre shopping mall is a disgusting, awful piece of brutalist, concrete, Jewish, modern architecture. Horrible. And Bloomsbury is a very wealthy, very upper-class, liberal, wishy-washy area, you know. And two complaints from these people, and Waitrose has caved in nationally and withdrawn this coffee brand from its shelves. And in a statement, Saquella say that all our coffee is fair trade and all our slaves are treated fairly. Bloomsbury, let me tell you about Bloomsbury, right? If these liberals are so anti-racist, why don't they go and live in Bethnal Green or Elephant and Castle? Why live in Bloomsbury, the most white area going? I mean, from Bloomsbury, a liberal there was, who, like all liberals, believed in the Wizard of Oz. In multiracial paradise, she also believed, but in all her views, she was deceived. For at heart, a racist she was. Boom, boom.
I'm just wondering if the picture itself with these little Negro slaves, were they carrying the coffee around on their heads at all?
Do you know, they're not even slaves. They're just workers on the plantation. There's no chains or anything, you know?
Shame. Getting rid of cultural heritage like that. Tea and coffee and things like that. But people just don't think of it. It's like the gollywog. Gollywog's gone now. We never see the gollywog. Yet when I was a kid, we saw gollywogs all the time. Nobody thought anything of it. It's a cheerful, happy representative of a black man. It's quite harmless. It's not negative at all. And yet, for some reason, they took a dislike to gollywogs and they got rid of them.
Listen, I had a whole collection. You used to collect the labels, send them off, and you would get a gollywog playing an instrument. You know, you're playing a banjo or something like that, or a trombone. And I had like 30 of these gollywogs. I had my whole band of pottery gollywogs on my shelf in my bedroom as a boy, little child, you know. And I didn't think, you know, I thought they were wonderful, you know. My aunts would get them for me and my grandmother would get them for me, you know. And I turned out all right, didn't I?
Just turned a gollywog band. I guess you could say that it does give people an unrealistic view of what a Negro is going to be like. I mean, you don't imagine gollywogs mugging, stealing, raping, all the other things you imagine Negroes doing. Gollywogs are just toy. So, you know, that's the only accusation I would make, is that they don't give people a realistic view.
Yes,
like.
Yes. I mean, in the Noddy stories, they did mug Noddy, didn't they? They mugged Noddy and Big Ears. That's more realistic, you know. Little Black Sambo, they were a bunch of little cowards being chased by lions, you know. But, yeah, I mean, see, our view is it's not realistic in a, you know, it whitewashes them, doesn't it, really, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, makes them into good guys. You know?
Whitewashed Gollywog.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you something else as well, Jase, about this trial last week, Alison Chablow trial. I really wanted to know what happened there and what the upshot of it was, because we've read in the papers and we read that she was singing along to songs, which I thought was brilliant. And then I saw a post saying that that was exaggeration and she wasn't singing along. And I heard that there was a full... the auditorium or the upstairs bit was filled with her supporters, and they were quite loud and vocal in their support, which I think is fantastic that there was so much support for her. But I don't know anything about what really went on, apart from I've heard that Gideon Falter was made to look quite a foolish. So what do you know about the court case last week?
Yeah, I mean, there's a big crowd of supporters there, 50 people in the auditorium. Of those, 40-odd were our people, a few journalists and a few of the enemy. So 40-plus were ours. And, it's an exaggeration. She was mouthing to the words. She was singing them. And people in the audience, they were respectful. But, yeah, there was a bit of foot-tapping going on and a bit of groaning when... the Jews said something, the usual sort of stuff they say. It actually, from people, it almost was like they were on the defense and we were prosecuting, because they didn't seem to know much about anything, or they pretended not to. You know, they'd never heard of Norman Finkelstein's The Holocaust Industry, so they said. And our legal team made mincemeat of them, really. The whole day was very good, really. The strange thing is, though, it almost like they realized they were losing and they've asked for a postponement. So the whole thing, which is very unusual, I've never even heard of a similar situation. It's a scheduled 3-day trial, begins Wednesday, ends Friday. That's the whole point of it. But after the first day, they'd had enough and they said, we need more time to prepare our prosecution.
go and read the books. Go and read Normal Finkenstein's book, and maybe go and read Irene Zisblatt's book. Maybe that might be a good idea.
Exactly. All these famous survivors who were never even near a concentration camp, they said they didn't know anything about these people. So I think the judge has given them time to go away and sort out their prosecution a bit more. So... nothing happens now till the 7th of March, which is good, I suppose. You know, I mean, the more this drags on, the better, the more publicity. The coverage was very good. The Daily Mail had a very good article. You know, the Times, it was in the paper copy of the Times, the Metro, the Evening Standard, the Telegraph. A lot of good coverage there. And we have to remember that when David Irving took the, what's that Jewish woman called? He took her to court for calling him a liar or something. But he got to the High Court, and it was all the civil courts. These are the civil courts and the criminal courts. He went into the civil court, a libel action. And publicity was phenomenal. And from that, a lot of people woke up. Likewise, when he was imprisoned in Austria for saying something that wasn't politically correct. So whenever... our views get out there into the mainstream, even if the press try and skew them, it's still good. And I want to thank everyone who showed up that day, because that was a very good turnout and it did influence the journalists. It gave the journalists something to clutch onto. They could talk about her supporters. Some supporters gave her flowers outside the court. And the atmosphere was very good, very upbeat, very positive. Which is exactly what we want, really. You know, they try and ban us, they try and shut us down. So it's important we don't hide away, be all timid and hide away. I mean, I've just heard recently that University College London have banned a conference on intelligence. This is what Toby Young went to this conference last year. He was in trouble, had a government position with universities, and he's in trouble. And Private Eye magazine is, what would you call it? A satirical, jokey magazine. Yeah, it covers
but, the
news.
But it covers it up for the Jews, doesn't it? It covers up for anything racial. It pretends to be the alternative, and it's politically incorrect, and it's poking fun at the government, but it only goes so far and covers up anything that the Jews are involved in and anything racial. That's our approved alternative, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the approved satirical magazine. And you can tell it's no good because in the past, when it had some decent editors, they were always in court, libel, slander, this and that. They're always getting prosecuted, you know. Now they just appear on television game shows, basically, you know. They're part of the establishment. But the odd little thing in there is, I mean, I bought this Private Eye to try and find this thing about the Conference on Intelligence. The chap who organized it is interviewed, and he says, well, you know, what's wrong with ideas? You know, you've got to discuss ideas. But, you know, I just had a look through Private Eye, and the only thing that a few little things are interesting. Here's something, right? How the honors system works. June 2017, Unilever's chief executive, Dutchman Paul Polman, receives honorary knighted for services to British business. January 2018, Paul Polman, KBE, announces closure of Coleman's Mustard Norwich factory after 160 years. So, yeah, a few little good things here and there, but avoids the big issues. Avoids the Jews.
Well, Toby Young, he was the education secretary, wasn't he? And he looked quite good because he'd been politically incorrect in some tweets years ago, and now they've hounded him out of office. So what was the connection between him and the intelligence conference? Why was it shut down?
Now look, UCL, they have all kinds of conferences. Marxists, communists, socialists, Trotskyists, anarchists, blah, 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 you know. And occasionally they have something good as well. And this conference on intelligence is basically looking at, you know, populations and intelligence and how we can improve education, how we can make, you know, get the best out of people, how we can
IQ. So IQ would have come up in it then, and the average IQs of nations, no doubt.
There we are, you see, IQ. And of course, if you talk about IQ, you talk about sexual differences, you talk about racial differences, and you talk about differences. You see, the modern society, they celebrate difference. They celebrate it, but they don't really want to talk about it. You know, we're all the same. But of course, we're not. You know, we're not. We're lots of differences here.
They talk about the gene for intelligence, don't they? And they have admitted that, and yet leftists will still say that there is no gene for intelligence, but there is. And they're talking about improving intelligence. That is the only way to improve it, is to have more people that have that gene. And the people that have the genes or the code required for intelligence are white people. That's where the intelligence comes from.
This is why the whole education system in Britain is completely stupid. You know, you can't put everyone in university. You can't expect half of directors on companies to be females. You can't expect 20% to be non-white, blah, blah, blah. It's all rubbish because people are different. And this conference was looking into that. You know, it does every year. You know, it's a very good conference. And Toby Young's education involved in a university type job he has, obviously went along there, you know, and that's apparently the reason he was sacked rather than politically incorrect comments. Who knows? But why do they? Well, it's obvious they don't like the truth. Anything that discusses the truth, they don't like. They've got to shut us down, basically. It's obvious when you think about it.
Yeah, mate, to the Alison Chablot trial, I think handing her those flowers, I mean, that's a masterstroke, that is, because it looks so good in the pictures. Walking in there with flowers, tulips or whatever, it's showing that her supporters really care about her, and it just makes a really good image, I thought. I'm not sure if that's a custom that happens when any of our people go to trial, or was that specific?
I think it should. I think we've got to think about image. We've got to think about how the press portrays. Many people in the press, in the mass media, they know the score. They don't like what's happening. You know, but they have to do what they're told. You know, they get paid. You know, they've sold their soul in a way. I mean, a lot of people have to, but you know. If you let's not make it easy for them to demonize us. Let's try. I mean, we are white people. We're chivalrous. We're honorable. Let us give our best. You know, let's do our best. Give our best face to them. Talking of honor as well, I think there is one thing that unites all white people, and this is honor. I think, in a way, honor is almost like a religion, because we can only believe in a religion, whatever it is, whether it's Christianity or paganism or whatever, or even atheism. But it has to be honorable. You know, we should always ask ourselves, is it honorable? And Alfred de Vigny talks about this in The Warrior's Life, his book. Is it honorable? I think that's always a very good rule to ask yourself before you do anything.
Definitely. Is it honorable? And I just say that with that handing her the flower, those flowers, it gets around the question as if they don't ask her anything, or if they don't quote her. If they show any picture, it shows that she's got like tulips there or rose there, and that implies that there's a supporter there that has handed it to her. So the more flowers, the better. Because even if they don't interview her or say how many supporters were there, it's quite obvious there were. So that was great. So yeah, that's great. And I did wonder why, when you said it was to go on for 3 days, it had been put back till March. But that's obviously because we were winning. So that's fantastic news, Jez. They've worried. They had to ask for postponement. Okay, thank you very much for coming on today, Jez. That's been absolutely great learning all about that. I'll be back tomorrow. Who have I got with me? Nat Danelaw. The return of Nat Danelaw tomorrow. So I'll see you then, and I'll say God bless and hail victory.